No, yeah, it's running. I'm sorry, I thought for a second there was
something. Continue. Yeah, so what happened in Salt Lake is that we did continue to hire people, and we hired wonderful faculty after I got there to the Department of Biochemistry. By and large, though, most of them were not physically oriented.
No.
So they're biochemically oriented. And wonderful colleagues.
Brenda
Bass is another Pew scholar.
Who was hired under
Who's hired, yeah, in
and
my
she's
department.
She's from Chicago. Colorado, right?
Colorado.
From Tom Catches.
Right? Tom Check.
Check is how it's pronounced.
And then Hal Weintraub at the Hutch in Seattle.
Right.
But, you know, she's really wonderful scientist, a great person to be in the department with. So the people that were hired in Utah, you know, are really great.
But you were kind of disappointed in their emphases. I mean, you know, you would expect.
Well, it wasn't that I was disappointed. It's that we had made offers to a number of more physical people, computational people, NMR spectroscopists, over the first few years after I arrived. And basically, the people that we would have loved to have in the department were the types of people that had many, many, many offers. Yeah.
And they just wouldn't come.
So we ended up making offers to people that went elsewhere. And so that was definitely a frustration.
I mean, were structural people just really also in such demand that that there you'd be finally hitting a level of people you just didn't want. In other words, really, really. Whereas in biochem, perhaps somebody like Brenda Bass, you know, she was top, and you know there were only there were so many people looking for a top job, less of a market that you could more easily get someone like her to agree to come to a starting up place or a revive sort of play.
Yeah. Well, also, it takes a special kind of person, I think, to move to Salt Lake. It's people don't grow up wanting to go to the University of Utah.
No, but maybe so after experience of enough places like MIT and other, your others, I mean, you didn't take a whole lot of convincing, right? I mean, it looked like a pretty...
It was really actually exciting. It's a very vital research community, and people just can't stop talking about science. Politics are low. It's supportive. I think it's a really great atmosphere. It just, sort of lacks the prestige or the, the sort of respectability, in part because of the Mormons, that, many other places.
Now, is their influence as heavy at University of Utah as it is at Brigham? Because this is not
Brigham.
No,
not at all. Absolutely. It's a secular university.
that's a doubtful word in the state of Utah. Maybe I shouldn't let my prejudices...
Well, I mean, that's exactly the problem, is that there are all these prejudices out there, and it is hard to recruit people at any level to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but it was truly secular, and...
Oh, yeah.
So I have actually colleagues who have experiences at, like, Weber State that are quite different.
That's different.
Secular university or not, state or...
It's not. But University of Utah is, at least in chemistry and biochemistry.
Keep rolling around like this, I'm trying to fix one.
Yeah, perfectly fine. Very eccentric, eclectic set of people who are just lively as hell, and it's fun to be there. Do nice work.
Mm-hmm. Do you get the sense that you have the same opportunities here in this upstart, of seeing a program kind of be developed?
Yeah, it's very exciting.
And,
and that was the thing that... It's a little bit different because I am coming in at virtually the tail end of the recruiting.
Okay.
Right? I was
number... It's only one person after you.
Number three, right. And so in that sense it's different, but this thing has been put together, this group has been put together very rapidly. And
do you think by people with a kind of the same sort of outlook you might have, and I don't mean in doing science and how one does science, but in the sense of making a, here you can concentrate that, four people kind of en masse, really, it seems to me in one side kind of a gamble, a big gamble, right? It could just be, but on the other hand, it seems like such a great opportunity is it expected you'll kind of collaborate? Is it expected, or is there a sense that you'll just, feed off each other's work that you're all kind of at a level where things are going to take off, and so it'll just be a matter of being a center where a lot of people interested in structural mm-hmm. issues and will just kind of be here, and it'll just, you know.
I think that's starting to happen. I mean, we share a lot of equipment. The students benefit from the presence of the other labs. There are collaborations going on. Marcusy and I have joint group meetings. So it's a good atmosphere, and I think the students come and they see how good it is, and it makes mm-hmm. them want to get into the field. Mm-hmm. And so our labs were very popular among the entering
right.
class.
The rotation students,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So and that was very encouraging.
So you're kind of turning, you're kind of saying to people, well, maybe next rotation period, right? In other words, you have more people asking to come in to do rotation here than you can handle.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's a nice. And I don't mean to,
you
know, you
nice.
Get to go,
yeah.
you know, oh, I've got power, I'm turning people away, but it's just that, you know, you get to pick some
yeah,
really.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I mean,
yeah.
that kind of ensures some high quality students and that sort of thing, and a chance to kind of mold people about, you know.
Yeah, because there's sort of this critical mass, we can have, you know, a journal club or a seminar series that's more focused on structure, and the students find it more of a compelling discipline, and, you know, instead of having two students in 5 years, I can, you know, basically count on having a student each year.
Of which, you know, again, you know, if they're clamoring to get in,
yeah.
you know, I mean, if there's everybody in the department knows that, oh, I have to, you know, either be put on like a wait list or I'm going to, there's a chance I might not get in to that lab, I need to, you know, they have to have some interest in the first place, so that's, your you know, your hit or miss rate too must go up. I mean, your hit rate must go up more than people turn
mm-hmm.
out to be productive and interested in it and
yeah.
have something to offer in return or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any is it worth talking about the fact that 3 out of the 4 of you are women? I mean, that's pretty
oh,
yeah. high.
That's definitely worth talking about.
That's not even
isn't
today I would say not. I wouldn't have expected the odds to come out.
Oh,
that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
It would have been 3 guys and 1 woman, or maybe 2 and 2.
Yeah.
But
pressure's on. Absolutely.
You mean to what? That you thought the pressure was to actually make sure that maybe even it got.
No, it's got to work. I mean.
Yeah, there has to, you know, in other words, and there was certainly you know,
people are going to look at this from the outside and go, "Uh-oh," you
they
know,
were
or
forced to hire
me. Look at all these women, and.
But indeed, perhaps it was.
No, I mean this is gonna work, and then people are gonna go, why aren't we doing this? You know what I mean? But if it doesn't work, then
and so while you were certainly looking for women, because you know nowadays you know one has an obligation to. It wasn't just that. In other words, you picked the 4 people who are here are not here because 3 of them are you know were women, and boy, you know structural biologist X, you know he looked just as good as one of the women who were hired. But let's hire a woman. It was just a beast.
Well,
women
you know,
are really the best. Sort of thing.
I don't really know the process
mm-hmm.
for
yeah, that's true for Hillary, and,
Hillary and Susan and me. you know, I,
no, you're right. I'm sorry.
With Tracy, it was you know pretty straightforward that yeah, she was
the best and the best fit even.
Yeah, she was the best fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so.
There are a lot of
you
women
know,
already
gonna
in the
be, it's going to be interesting.
Here. I know Elizabeth Blackburn is here. And
she's moved.
Okay. Never mind. What? How many other women?
I don't know. I haven't done the
yeah,
sums.
Yeah, I was
know,
just
going to
ask.
Not enough. And Berkeley does not have a good reputation.
Well,
our department does not have a good reputation with respect to hiring and promoting women.
I've interviewed the woman who's the first chair of a hard sciences department in the entire UC system, and she became chair in 1984,
yeah.
which, and that's the entire system. That's pretty sad. In a sense, I mean, again, maybe I shouldn't show my color so much, but that's pretty sad for a public institution versus a
yeah, but, I mean, so you've hit on something which what is something that's important in the sense that, yeah, I'm in this department, we have all these women hired, we get more minority graduate students because
okay.
the student body here is diverse,
mm-hmm.
we get many more minority undergraduates I mean, Salt Lake, it was impossible to recruit minorities, and the undergraduate population was mostly white.
Okay.
And that's because those are the people that live in Utah, and minorities don't want to come to Utah anyway because of all the racism.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense. Okay, but
this is Berkeley.
This is Berkeley. And so you have this opportunity, because it's Berkeley, to accomplish something in the world that's different, you know, and that's going to be accomplished. I mean, there isn't any screwing around.
Do you think there's a sense among science, you know, just even, maybe just not even among science, but you and your own feelings, like, do you think that these issues about, you know, just simple representation of a population sort of thing, but do you think that women, people with different kind of cultural experiences, be they in this culture, but again, from, you know, an African-American point of view, or, you know, Latino, or then, you know, people from, who share, you know, I'm thinking of a lot of Asian students, you know, in California, who may have, you know, their homes are still very much from another culture, or they are actually born in here now, so they have a double culture, if you will. Do you think they do science differently? I mean, do you think they're going to not just change the face of science in the sense of there will be less white men and more representative sampling of the population at large? Or do you think that they come to, like, science with different questions to ask, or different ways, a different style?
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
without stereotyping, right? I mean,
well, I think you could look at science in foreign countries and just answer that in the affirmative.
Okay. The idea that British sit around thinking and don't do anything.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
You know, but, you know, look at issues of nature, science in blank, science in Nigeria, science in Japan, science in Sweden, you know. That means that it's done differently by these different people.
Sure.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be any reason to write about it.
Yeah, even among nature's editors who
have
their heads in the sand sometimes, I think about something, but... especially this women's issue, you know. Actually, this may be because I've discussed it with a few others. You know, the NSF recently instated a policy where they will not fund meetings if women are not featured in the lineup of speakers. And then Nature came out with an editorial condemning this. It was basically the same as giving special preference to minorities, especially they cited the case of Black Americans getting into Ivy League schools, where they were always perceived then as having been given an extra thing. You know, they weren't really as smart as white. You know, it just perpetuated notions of inequality, and so they put this. You know, the editorial condemned what NSF was doing, and of course went on to say that it didn't matter anyway. You know, that less white men were going into science anyway, and more other people were, so eventually it would work out anyway. Why bother doing this? And I was wondering, is it something that strikes you as, I don't know, an attitude, a common attitude maybe, or among colleagues that, you know, by giving preference, you know, by the NSF requiring that you find a woman as capable as any of the men to give a talk at a meeting, that everybody's going to be looking at that woman and saying, you know, the one woman at the meeting with five featured speakers, there she is. Oh, she got this invitation because she's a woman, not because she's a good scientist. Do you get that sense that people think that way? In other words, do you think the outsiders who are going to look
sure
at this program at Berkeley and say, oh, one of those multi-culti universities, that's why they hired three women out of four in this new group or in this new, you know, with this Markey funds, you know? You think that's still pretty kind of a common...
Boy, I don't know why people are going to think we hired women, or women were hired here.
You did point out, it's going to be, it's certainly one
step
in the direction.
Way, you just wait for them to die.
It does change, don't you think? Don't you think your generation has a different attitude than the previous one about, for instance, women and working with women? I mean...
That's a pretty broad generalization.
Yeah,
I
realize that. Yeah, maybe
there are people catching
productive.
Up all over the place, but of all ages. Irene Weber and I ran a Gordon conference last summer.
And I don't recognize the name at all, so I don't know that it matters. I mean,
it was on diffraction method, so that's the crystallography, basically. Okay. And we had a really large number of women speakers and women attendees. The meeting got very high ratings.
From the attendees?
From the people that attended. Yeah, I mean, frankly, the way that it worked out, we simply picked topics. And we were certainly careful to try to find women who were doing the leading work, but, you know, frankly, we would have had to actively exclude women to...
Right, so in other words,
to have a meeting that was, you know, that male-dominated,
right.
Although in the event it turned out that there were more women at this meeting giving talks. But
more women than men, you mean, were featured?
No, more than usual, more than 2 years ago.
And and it wasn't fishing around for them, right? I mean, it was
absolutely.
Simply a matter of actually maybe the opposite of, wow, you know, there's, you know.
Yeah, we had to be, all we had to do was not exclude them. And it turned out to be a really nice meeting.
It's an interesting, you know, the statistics, for instance, now I know if this is the American...
I mean, I could give you another horror story with respect to that. As you know, the Gordon conferences are set up where the chair people write grants and raise money and from the government, from...
The Gordon Foundation,
from private companies, and the Gordon Conference puts in a small fraction of the cost of the meeting.
And the cachet.
Right. And we raised enough money to take care of childcare.
Oh, wow.
Childcare, no problem. But the director of the Gordon Conference wouldn't permit the money to be used for that.
They would have a say over that, even if it was mainly outside funds. I mean,
they'd
approved
the
meeting.
Yeah, I mean, they felt that this was
a
liability
the
problem. Yeah, and they have to approve every use of the fund. So
they're ultimately responsible.
We couldn't use money for childcare that came down from on high. You know? And you know, the Gordon Conferences have a policy that children under 10 or something are not allowed in meeting halls and dining halls and. Whatever
but
it
people
is.
Must be using this opportunity also for vacation, like the Berkshires.
No.
People just
these
come
meetings
by
are
themselves.
Not vacations.
No, I meant, you know, okay, but, you know, your spouse is off, you know, who's
well,
not at the meeting.
Well, the problem that we have is that there are many couples, or some couples in the field where one or both are, you know, really leaders in the field and are doing excellent work, and
they need
you just
care.
Can't get them. Yeah, right. You can't get them to come to the meeting, and they can't come to the meeting because they can't get childcare.
How was that handled? Did you just you let it happen? I mean, there was no way to really fight it. It would happen later, and people actually didn't come, or you provided the childcare yourself.
One person didn't come for the meeting. She just came for a talk. Two other couples. They both came and traded off. Childcare
with each other.
With each other,
oh, wow.
So they had to skip some of the sessions, and couldn't eat meals with any of the people. So we had a table set up, sort of on the lawn out in front of the cafeteria, and there was people would join them for lunch so that they would be included in sort of scientific, informal scientific discussions. And we simply, as the chair people, allowed them to bring their children to the poster sessions and things like that, but the head of the site, the director of the site, was obviously violating the rules to allow this to happen. So what we did is we had a petition available for people to sign, and virtually everybody at the meeting signed it, that number one, we should be able to use money for childcare, and number two, the director of the site shouldn't face any disciplinary
right.
action.
We made him
fired.
Or her do it.
Yeah,
but.
Exactly. Because he let these people have their kids on site.
Do you know if the policy's been changed? Or
no, it hasn't. We sent the petitions to the director, Cruikshank, of the Gordon Conferences, and he refused to respond. He didn't respond. Huh. Doesn't return calls.
Do you worry that perhaps the next time you want to chair a Gordon conference, you...
No, he's retiring.
Oh, okay. And Gordon himself just recently passed away, right, or something? I think I remember reading about Gordon died or something. But maybe policy will change then. That's interesting, though, to see, you know, that's an indicative kind of...
Yeah, these are major international meetings, and, you know, people's careers get made by the fact that somebody in their study section heard the talk or saw the poster, and they get in the meeting, and they get funded, and they go do work. I mean, this is not a trivial thing.
And as you say, this is almost kind of it's not an issue of being politically correct, and you and, you said her name was Irene Weber. And you and Professor Weber didn't just sit there saying, oh, let's be politically correct and make sure there's child care. You knew there were situations, of course, where people couldn't come
these are
and
our
participate
friends. Yeah, exactly.
If they didn't have child care.
Yeah, exactly.
And why should they have to, why should they have to come up with the extra money and expense of providing child care if other people don't have to? Well, the world is changing, and, you know, those more kind of practical situations, maybe. You know, I think of state institutions that try to perhaps deal with this a little more upfront than other institutions, not necessarily all the time. Child care at UCLA, there's a wait list of approximately 4 years, so of course your child doesn't need that care anymore. And what does one do? Say, well, I'm going to have a child in 3 years, I'll put my name down now. And of course, Harvard's, you know, changed its tenure policy as of 1990. Both men and women on tenure track can have the tenure process delayed for up to 18 months for the chance to raise two children. So you can get an extra year and a half, I think.
Well, it doesn't matter at Harvard anyway.
No,
so.
Yeah,
exactly. Who cares?
Well, I actually read about Indeed, a woman who had just had a child who was a Pew Scholar giving an interview saying, but it doesn't matter, it's a great policy. She actually took advantage of it. She said, so it did have that, you know, she got the time off.
Connie Hall, probably.
Yeah. And she said, but it doesn't matter. Nobody's been tenured on tenure track here since 1958 or something. She said so.
Yeah.
But I thought there was, you know, she certainly felt the policy was a tilt in the right direction, I guess, in her interview. She talks about that. You know, that she had, you know, that she was there at the point to see at least a place like Harvard, the old boys' school that there ever was, one around in everybody's mind, kind of understand that she may have a different clock to follow than her male colleagues when it came to coming down for tenure. I know of another Pew Scholar, a woman who just had a child, and 3 weeks later she is back full-time in the lab because she said to me, you know, I can't, you know, people don't wait, you know, the rest of the lab, the experiments don't stop because I had a child. That sort of thing, and wow, you know, it just doesn't accommodate a situation like that, which you may feel as well comes on the male side, you know, as a parentless half of a couple. I don't know, maybe you just don't want the issue hasn't come up. I'm not digging around for it.
Oh, God, no. That's the great thing about having tenure. I can retire and raise the kids.
Okay, so you're going to have kids now, huh? Don't you get tenure?
It's a joke. Connie Holm and Larry Goldstein are moving to San Diego, so Harvard has this policy, but they're gone.
Yeah, I don't know when she was up. I mean, I assume that she didn't.
Will be gone.
I mean, I would be, you know, if she got tenure, that's great. She would be the first one since some 19 in any department.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different, you know, nobody gets tenure. You go do something else, and then they'll invite you back in 10 years once you've been with tenure, right? That's how you get
I guess
tenure.
That's how they do it.
Everywhere. I do want to talk about the zipper stuff, the leucine zipper stuff. I don't know if you want to do it now. Let's turn this off and discuss this.